Hi, Spring fans. Welcome to a beautiful podcast. I'm your host, Spring Developer Advocate Josh Long, and this show is all about the real heroes behind Spring and its ecosystem.
Hey, what's up, everybody? How you doing? Good time? It's April 8th as I record this. I can't believe it. We are nearly into summer. I mean, that's just a few months away, of course, but I can't believe we're this far into spring. I can't believe it's already April 8th. Sun's out. Life is good. I hope you're all doing well. You're happy, healthy, and safe. I am doing pretty well, thank you. I've been working dutifully on the upcoming Spring One Tour. I cannot wait for that Spring One Tour event. That is going to be so much fun. I don't know if we've got the abstract out there or the roster or whatever, but oh yeah, just trust me. You want to be there. Spring One Tour. Sign up now. What else? This week I did an O'Reilly training with Kotlin. That's always fun because I love Kotlin. I love the community, and I love having a chance to look at all the new stuff in preparation for what I might or may not include in the presentation. And I got to look at some of this cool stuff in Kotlin 1.5. Can't wait for that. And of course, Ki. I'm not sure. It's Ki. It's a new Kotlin REPL, and it is awesome. It's so cool. So that's neat. I also worked on Quartz. The Quartz job scheduler. I worked on building an integration for that into Spring Native, and I got 95% of the way. But of course, with it came a feature request or a feature request for Spring Native itself. And I just saw that Andy Clement, mad scientist and all around amazing human being, Andy Clement, just pushed that code to the trunk, and so that works now as well. Next week, I'm doing a presentation with Microsoft, with Microsoft's Julien Dubois and Rory Preddy on Azure Spring Cloud and a lot of other stuff that I can't really say. So join us for that. Register now. You can, of course, follow me on Twitter and hit me up for that, or just watch. I'll be tweeting about it incrementally. That's going to be a ton of fun. And of course, today's episode is a lot of fun. Today's episode is really cool. I got to talk to my buddy, the one, the only, the amazing Daniel Bryant. Now, Daniel is he's a technologist. He's just a technologist. He loves technology. He's very curious. He's always getting up to different things to learn, to expand himself. And I just love to read the things that he writes. I really think he's just an interesting mind. I enjoy catching up with him every time I used to bump into him in person, because he like I traffics the conference circuit. And what else? I guess that's it. I think this episode is I imagine it must have felt a little odd because he's, Daniel is nothing if not very, very humble. I mean, I don't know why. He could be arrogant. He's certainly really brilliant, he's just very, because he's so curious, he's always a student, even if he could be the teacher. And so as a result, he just tends to share a lot of the stuff that he learns. So he works as an editor for InfoQ, which I used to be. More than a decade ago, I used to be an editor for InfoQ. And a fact about which I'm very proud, of course. And he still is, because he's more awesome than I, so he continues to work and continues to do amazing things. InfoQ is InfoQ.com, great news portal, and they run a great conference series called QCon, and it's just run by great people, and all around just a great organization. And the people that contribute to it, the editors are they don't, it's not like it's a full-time job, right? So you're an editor, and you can, well, for some, I suppose it might be a full-time job, but the vast majority of it is just people that get paid to contribute and research and report. And it's just, it's really great. I mean, it's just a wonderful, wonderful organization, and I get a lot. I learn from it. It's one of those websites that I manually check every day. And so whenever I see Daniel write something, I'm just, oh, great. Okay, I'm going to learn something today. I love hanging out with him, so I was so pleased that he joined us for this interview. For this discussion, and like I say, it must have been different for him because he so often has people on the podcast and he's the interviewer, not the interviewee, clearly he should be the interviewee more often. Thank you, Daniel, and as always, to all of you, thank you so much for listening. Daniel.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. You're here. You made it. I'm so pleased we made this happen.
Yeah, likewise, Josh. It's been a long time in the making, right? We've tried a few times in person and and over the wires.
And I think we were on that undo.
Oh, quite right. Yeah, it was only a couple of weeks ago.
That was really fun.
That was great. Great bunch of people, right?
Great, exactly. The conversation, it made me, my friend, it's so cliche, but I missed the hallway track. I missed it so much.
Yeah.
That conversation was basically it gave me, the birds of a feather thing that, people love about conferences. I love birds of feathers, like
it's serendipity, Josh, right? It's the random hallway track, bumping into folks, going for a beer, going for a coffee, off script, whatever, right? Like I'm missing that.
I miss it. But it's not just bumping into folks. It's bumping into amazing folks. And you're one of those folks I always look forward to bumping into.
Yeah, ditto. I know what you mean. Now, we used to see each other probably like two or three times in different places in the world each year. Yeah. And maybe not for a long time, but it was enough to catch up and shoot the breeze and share ideas.
And learn. Now I just have to read your work on InfoQ to catch up with you, because it's so much harder to have that serendipity in the age of the pandemic.
It is. It is. Twitter is a sort of poor substitute in some ways. I like Twitter a lot. Get a lot of value from Twitter. And I follow your work on Twitter and many other folks. But it's just, it's async, isn't it? It's not the same as the human connection, right?
And can I tell you what? Twitter is not, I like the people that are, but I'm not loving the news. I just don't know if I can handle it. I don't know. Every day you just read about some horrible thing, and I'm just getting more and more stressed out every time I open up this app. And while I love the community, I just think maybe I'm trying to squeeze water from a stone. Maybe this isn't the right vehicle for community. I don't know, man. I don't know.
I've curated mine fairly aggressively, but just in the current climate we're all living in, bit of politics, bit of pandemic and so forth, it does seep through, and people do bring their whole selves to Twitter, which I respect, as in you can't just expect everyone to talk about tech all the time. Sure. And for me, I definitely get a lot of value, and sometimes I know when to walk away from Twitter too, right? If you've had a big busy day, don't do that doom scrolling, as I call it. Right, it's not a good look. Get your value, but then put it aside.
It's not my community that is causing me trouble. They don't. What I'm saying is, Twitter shows me content it thinks I want to see, right?
Yeah. Or it wants you to see, Josh, because in terms of they're making money, right?
Yeah. And either way, it's just so much. If I'm honest, nobody in my timeline has been really all that bent out of shape since the last president.
Yeah.
was succeeded, right? Yeah. So there's not that. It's not like people in my timeline that I know and respect are stabbing me in the face with these stress assaults, but it's more just, I think the algorithm still thinks I want to see that. And so I can't get it to just show me cute kittens and hamsters and stuff like it used to, right? It used to give me the cute and cuddly stuff, and I would love for that to happen,
It's a nice break in the work day, right? Bit of tech, bit of fluffiness, bit of tech.
Yeah, I need
bit of cats, bit of tech, bit of dogs. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I love Reddit. I don't know if you use Reddit.
Yeah, use Reddit, yeah.
There's obviously the tech stuff. I love that. I'm a lurker in a lot of the different tech Reddits, but there's also there's a Reddit on guinea pigs, which I love. Nice. And rats, and there's one called Grabby Hand or whatever, and it's just about cute animals that have little hands.
you've plumbed the depths further than I have, Josh. I sort of Spring, Java, maybe a bit of Kubernetes, right? That's my limits.
There's all that, of course. And then also power washing or pressure washing. There's a Reddit on that. I don't know if you've ever...
There's a Reddit for everything, right?
But it's... Do you ever watch power washing videos?
It's not a thing I've looked at, Josh. I'll confess.
I should have foreshadowed that this would be the depth of our discussion was power washing videos. No, but you've got to watch power washing videos. You've got to just go to this Reddit, find just pressure washing or power washing. I forget which of it is, but It's so satisfying. It is nice. So satisfying. It's my moment of zen every day. It's just this very sort of...
Very cathartic, right?
You just... It's like refactoring. You ever like... Ever delete code? You've got a great library and just solved it. You don't even need it anymore. So you just delete the whole thing. If that you can't have that, go to this Reddit, you know. Okay, my friend. Who are you? Go ahead and tell the crowd who you are. I wouldn't do a great job. You're just my friend and hero. And
I'm back. We've known each other for many years, haven't we? So we've crossed paths. My background is Java development. So I say my native programming language is very much Java. And that's where you and I have crossed paths over the years, although I've done a bit of Go and JavaScript. Currently, I'm working as director of DevRel at Ambassador Labs. We're doing lots of exciting stuff in the Kubernetes space. Yeah. We were chatting on the Undo podcast. That's where I was sort of coming from there, talking a lot about debugging. We've got CNCF telepresence tool. We're going to work in the API gateway space as well. And that's kind of where I'm at the moment, doing a lot of connecting with communities. Like we were chatting off mic about this, like in the sort of current climate we're in, we are definitely missing the conference vibe. And we've had to switch up at Ambassador Labs, sort of how we reach out, how we connect with the communities. You know, doing a few online conferences, online events, trying to get folks together like best we can. Do you know what I mean? We can't do the in-person conferences, which we all know and love. But yeah, that's where I'm kind of at these days, Josh.
So what does Ambassador Labs do? What's their big thing?
So our big thing is helping engineers be productive with Kubernetes. And that's kind of somewhat a broad statement, right? But the key thing we see, a lot of folks coming from very successful companies, you know, they've got their Java monolith or something, and they're running on VMs, and they've heard all the good stuff about microservices, or they're bumping into lots of friction. They want to move to the cloud, they want to go microservices, and it's very much a new world.
Yeah.
And we help folks like with our tools, like, you know, API Gateway Ambassador, obviously, you know, gets traffic in to to the cluster. You always need to get traffic into your cluster, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's many other sort of competing techs in this space as well. But you always need to get traffic into your cluster. We've got telepresence, which is about debugging. In particular, you know, I love Java, right? There's only so many Java microservices I can spin up on my laptop. Just like, I fire up Minikube, right? I deploy my Java services. When you get to a certain point, you really want to run a bunch of Java services remotely, like in GKE or Azure or Amazon or wherever. Yeah. And you want to run a few locally and debug them. You want to fire up IntelliJ, right? You want to start poking and prodding around these things. And telepresence basically is a bridge between a remote and your local environment. And you can reroute traffic. So I can poke stuff in the ingress, right? As if I'm a user. And then when it hits the service, I'm what we call intercepting. So we set up these intercepts. Yeah. Instead of traffic going through to the remote service, it will now be rerouted to my local machine. As long as I've got a fairly loose timeout on the ingress, I can watch all the variables, I can change variables, all the things we know and love in our IDEs, and I'm a big IntelliJ user, I can do locally on my select services, and then I can send the traffic back into the remote cluster and see the results. So it's my laptop is in the cluster temporarily.
Now I get why you were trying to tell me about this. This is exactly what I needed. Somebody, maybe it was you, maybe you're the person that did this to me, but years ago, somebody asked me about building some configuration for the Spring Cloud Discovery Client integration with something like Netflix Eureka. The use case was, if the service registry is in charge of resolution, wouldn't it be great if the bit of the iceberg that was submerged below the water, which is to say the stuff in my cluster, could be resolved uniformly along with the stuff that's local? So I could start up a Eureka and have it give me actual IPs for services in Kubernetes. Yeah.
Yes.
For like 80% of my services.
Yeah.
But then the ones that I'm working on locally, it would give me those. And I built a hackety version of that. And it was it wasn't great, Daniel. It was not, I'm not proud. Okay. I'm just saying it did the job, but it was only for Eureka and only for Spring and only for Spring Cloud and only for Java apps. And, you also had to do some hackety sorcery and whatever.
So maybe DNS is involved, Josh, because like we do a lot of magic with DNS. Like the
engineers you're doing it the right way. Mine was no DNS; it was only the service registry, which is fine if you're using the service registry.
Okay. Yeah.
If you're not using a service registry, then if I had known about Ambassador, and I, you know, it's not your, I'm sure you've tried to tell me about this
I've got a few subtle hints, Josh, because we've had telepresence one, even before I joined the company. It's one of the reasons I joined the company is like that. Yeah. I was sort of struggling with like moving to Kubernetes, right? And all these tools that were popping up, and Ambassador, you know, we were called DataWire at the time. This is a few years ago now.
Okay.
Telepresence is a CNCF tool. So we donated it to the CNCF. Before I joined the company, I was like, this telepresence tool is amazing. Like, just it solves like a whole bunch of my problems.
No wonder you're so happy. I was like, there's no way this guy actually knows Kubernetes and is that happy. He hasn't tried debugging yet. And now I understand. You've solved it. No wonder.
Yeah, oh. We've just released a new version, Josh. So like telepresence one was added so much value. And telepresence two supports, well, it supports better resilience. The way we're doing like proxying now, using sidecars, as opposed to like, we used to swap out deployments in Kubernetes. So increased resilience, you can do multiple services now. So I can set up like two or three locally, which is nice. Yeah. And with our community edition, we've got like integration with our cloud. You can do what's called selective intercepts. So the super cool thing, right, is that you and I could be sort of pairing, and I would do what we call a preview URL. So I would intercept a service. I'd create a preview URL. I'd share it with you. And when you hit that preview URL, you'd go via telepresence, via our cloud, you'd see my changes I'm making. So I could be like running a service locally, you hit the endpoint, you see my changes, but then we could have like my colleague Cindy, who's doing a thing, but not using the preview URL, using the normal ingress URL, and she would not see our changes, right? Because like it's a selective intercept, and that is magic, right? When you start, you and I coding away, doing our thing, yeah, exactly. Be careful with mutating state. That's something interesting, right? If you're mutating data or whatever, but standard thing, right? Whereas Cindy could be happily going through, her request does not get rerouted because she's not got the selective header. Oh, and that is like, that is a bit of a game changer for folks, right? You can have multiple sort of isolated groups of folks sharing the cluster.
Is the predicate, like, how do you determine what the selectivity, you know, is like, how do you determine that this is going to be for Cindy versus not, like, is it just,
it's all based on headers, Josh. So so you do need to propagate headers down through the stack, if that makes sense. So we give you the preview URL that actually hits our cloud, our SaaS offering, adds the header in, and then routes you into the cluster. Use like sort of tunnel into the cluster, and then you need to, like, whatever service you're hitting first, you need to propagate the context down. But you can see, I can share on my my GitHub or the Ambassador Labs GitHub, I've used Spring Cloud Sleuth to propagate in a couple of examples, right?
Nice.
So it literally is a one liner right now. I propagate in the application.properties file. I add x-telepresence-id as a header to propagate along with all my B3 open tracing or Zipkin headers, right? So like with Spring, it is super easy to propagate those headers because you're already doing it for distributed tracing. Most of us are.
Yeah, we have baggage. We have the concept of baggage.
Exactly. And then you literally pass an extra like parameter down through now. And when that request hits the sidecar that we inject, it says, is the header present? Oh, yes, it is. That must be Josh and Daniel doing their thing. We'll reroute the traffic here. When Cindy hits, there's no header there. Go straight through to the services currently. Yeah, in the actual cluster.
That is amazing. That is so cool. So how do I, you said there's a community edition. Does that mean it's free to a point?
Yes, we've got like an open source edition, community edition, and like an enterprise offering, of course.
Sure.
Pop along to getambassador.io.
getambassador.io.
Sounds good, Josh. And we can share the links like in the show notes, perhaps after there. But you'll see we've got all our offerings there. We've got a service catalog, which we're investing in a lot at the moment. So you can see all your services in Kubernetes, and you can jump off from there into telepresence too.
So the catalog, does that mean I can like discover and then click on a button and suddenly have that selectively made available for debugging?
So the catalog, it gives you, like, you can break down via cluster. So you, like, we're using actually the Ambassador Edge Stack, which is our API gateway plus a bunch of other things to synchronize what's in your cluster with the service catalog. So the service catalog is like a SaaS offering. So you connect up your Edge Stack and it basically says you've got all these services there. It's what you mentioned is definitely where we're going. It's not quite as polished at the moment. You can see your services and there is a button to fire up telepresence. And we're making it even even slicker. At the moment, you sort of get like a list of what we call intercepts. So you look at your service.
I think what you're describing is exactly what I was trying to describe. So,
you know. Yeah, it isn't. So, for example, at the moment, when you click through on a service, you sort of see all the intercepts for all the services. Ideally, it'd be like you'd sort of like click the button and it would go, boom, set up the intercept for this individual service. It's not quite as polished as we'd like yet, but we're on the case. And that should be, you know, time listeners actually hear the podcast, it may even be there.
That is so cool. That is amazing. Okay.
It's one of those friction points I mentioned, Josh, right? As a developer, these days, we tend to build more things, right? We've just got more services.
Sure.
Now they're running remotely. I'm chatting a lot to folks about sort of understanding. But the number one point is like, what have I actually got in my system? How is it decomposed? How do all these things work? And then once you understand at this big picture and we know something's going wrong, how do I understand at the service level? And debugging is the best way, right?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And this is the one thing that it's the one thing that, you know, I feel like they make harder for new technologies because it's always an afterthought, but it's not real until it's debuggable. And so,
yes,
you know,
yeah.
One of the things that we've been working on our side, I'm sure you know, but just for the audience, the Spring Native, you know, GraalVM and all that, right?
Oh, I love that stuff. Yeah, yeah.
And it's neat, right? Really, really cool opportunity, but debugging is not.
Oh, I haven't done much of that, to be fair. I've done the kind of simple POCs, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's by definition very interesting, but by definition also it's possible, you know, there's this thing called substitutions where you can actually swap out parts of the component graph, like, you know.
Oh, interesting.
So you can have like macros in effect, right? Where you have one compiled unit for one kind of binary versus what you get in the jar. So your GraalVM might actually execute different code than your JVM code would.
Yeah.
Which creates a debugging nightmare and a testing nightmare, right? Because you now have.
Testing like for like, effectively.
Exactly. And so, and I feel like the same problem bedevils distributed systems right now with containers, right? It's just very hard to, because we have a tension. You know, my inclination is to build a container that is so lightweight that it's practically nothing. But of course, all the things I need to then pop into that container and debug are no longer there, right?
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about unikernels and things like that, I'm stripping away all that stuff, right?
So, Yeah, no, I totally hear you, Josh, because you don't want to leave all your debugging tools in there because it's a security risk, right? Not only is it big and resource hungry, it's massive security risk, right? So, yeah, like I'm doing, you know, a fair bit of work around like multi-stage Docker files, those kind of things. So, like, you know, bringing your Maven image in to build and then shipping a kind of, you know, OpenJDK Alpine or something.
Yeah.
And there's like Distroless from Google, some pretty cool things, and playing around with build packs a little bit as well. So we're sort of, there's some solutions out there, but I do hear you in terms of, yeah, it can be a challenge. You always want to test what you're actually shipping.
Right. And you want to be able to debug, but of course, do I really need to debug? You know, is it worth creating a separate build? And of course, then you're like, well, maybe I can just ship the debuggable version versus the... But then I'll get into the original problem of having now three variants. I've got the JVM, the debuggable, and the, lean mean version. You know, it's a nightmare. So all
I've seen some people trying to use... effectively sidecars, Josh, and they've bumped into that. So having this lightweight app, but kind of like a sidecar. And there's something newish in Kubernetes, ephemeral containers, I think it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
A few folks sort of are playing around with that as well. So you can kind of like spin up stuff, add it into the pod and then into the namespace, these kind of things. But it's early days there, early days on that, I think.
Totally. And that gets you access to the resources, but not necessarily to the running process.
Yeah.
So you're not actually in the process space. You know, how do you connect GDB, you know, or something like that, right? Or the JVM debugging.
Yeah, and we've definitely found that, like, as in even back, going back to when I first started, remote debugging is fraught with danger in terms of protocols and ports and these kind of things. And Kubernetes, like, I've definitely seen some folks, like, even in production, leave their debug ports open in Kubernetes. And I'm like, oh, do you really want to do that? Probably not, right?
You don't, but on the other hand, what's the alternative? You know,
telepresence, right?
Exactly. That's what
we're pitching. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, being able to run everything locally is just, you avoid the whole debugging remotely nightmare. You know, there's always, I'm guessing, trade offs or whatever. But what you said it perfectly just a moment ago, Josh, every new technology adds a lot of new cool things.
Yeah.
Some of the like day to day stuff that we all rely on is somewhat of an afterthought. And I think like the debugging story around sort of Kubernetes and Java is something that we'll see more and more as the sort of the late adopters, later majority coming on board. They're like, hey, I used to be able to just press this button, connect up to my Spring app and debug. Why can I not do this anymore?
Exactly. Yeah. You know? I, and I won't feel confident until I can, right? So
yeah, 100%. You know, yeah.
Reasonably, very reasonably. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So wait, all that stuff comes with everything you just described. What, is that the enterprise version or is that the community edition or?
So with the open source version, which you can do sort of a straight intercept. So for example, you don't get the use case we talked about with me and you and Cindy. With the open source version, you can reroute selective traffic from a remote cluster to your local machine, but everyone's going to see that. Right. Sure. As soon as you go to the community edition, then you can start doing these selective intercepts. And then you get the ability to not only say, you know, just inject a header and pass this down through. It's kind of like a bit more of the proxy, the sidecar proxy is a bit smarter in the community edition. And you can also do these preview URLs, which, like, again, you can share. Like the preview URLs, when we show folks on like on demos and on community sessions we run, they are suddenly like, you know, like you get this isolation because a lot of folks spin up either individual clusters or individual namespaces per developer, per team. Sure. But now you can just like, you can share a lot of the common services and just selectively, you know, route on a couple of services.
And that actually, and that means it doesn't matter what you do, you can still share. So I'm all about team cluster, right?
Yep.
Like
yep.
When in doubt, create a new cluster. I'm all about just throw it, and it's cheap and easy. And I know it's not like, and you know, I hope people don't think me a little disingenuous, but that was even before. Okay, so full disclosure, Tanzu, I think, have a product they'd love to sell you to help manage lots of clusters.
Yep, yep.
But even ignoring that, I just, and again, you know, ignoring that, I still think it's just a better approach just because there's certain bits of isolation that you just can't guarantee with namespaces. And you have to remember to do namespaces, otherwise you're in default, right?
Yep.
Whereas with cluster, you can't accidentally interrupt somebody else's cluster. It's
a stronger guarantee, Josh. You know, that's what we chat to folks in, like, what guarantees do you want? And it's, you know, just trade-offs in terms of namespaces are easier. You can do centralized like RBAC management. So a lot of folks I chat to like want to control it in terms of security, and controlling one cluster is easier than many. But at 100%. The same time, it's all about trade-offs, right?
Right. And also, like, I don't want from a security perspective, namespaces feel like a very thin sort of abstraction, whereas a cluster is, even if everything goes completely sideways in your cluster, it doesn't matter. It's not going to impact production, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. You've got to be like doing some pretty bad stuff, haven't you? Yeah, exactly.
And as you know, kubectl get all is a lie, right? So like, it's not everything. There's still stuff that's shared, even if you're not sharing the same namespace, right? So just isolation is much better at the cluster level. But anyway, all that to say that, I want a unified abstraction. I want something that'll give me the ability to work with lots of clusters. You know, sounds like it gives me that. That's a huge deal to me. If your thing is only namespaces, it doesn't meet it. It's not where I am. You know, and that gives me the ability to actually debug production stuff as well. I can poke at production APIs.
Exactly. We it depends on your sort of level of sophistication is the wrong word, but sort of a little comfort, I guess, with Kubernetes. Like, you've got to be careful with debugging in production. Like, I know a lot of companies that do it, right? Sure. And if you can selectively reroute traffic, you minimize the risk. That's the key thing here. Whatever technology you use, Telepresence gives you that. Other products give you that as well. But a lot of folks we chat to, if you start mentioning production, particularly when they're sort of more late adopter companies, late majority, like, they're not comfortable with that yet. But we say, hey, like, all the benefits you get in production, you can do it now in staging. A lot of folks have got like synthetic traffic they run against staging. Right. And I'm like, hey, if you can Telepresence into that, you can then debug that synthetic traffic. You know, maybe they've recorded some traffic from live. They've scrubbed the PII. They've scrubbed any sensitive data.
Right.
They're making these requests. And then they can, you know, still sort of have this collaboration going on, this isolation in a shared staging environment now. Right. And once you get super comfortable, then you can move to production, because some stuff you just can't recreate anywhere other than production, right?
Yeah.
But we definitely see, we test the waters, because some folks start mentioning testing in production, everyone gets super nervous, right?
Well, and reasonably so. I'm just saying, would it be nice if the thing that you do to make that work in production is the same as you do, albeit against a different set of services, in development, you know, in Q&A and integration, whatever. So that really, I'm more than excited about what you're describing. I can't wait to try it out. So why do I need the Enterprise Edition?
Is the Enterprise Edition
free but not for production version?
Yeah, it gives you more scope, Joshua. With we're still refining the pricing and so forth on these, mm-hmm. but enterprise, I mean, the biggest thing is you get technical support, SLAs, you know, the support team is just fantastic, right? And you also will get access to more intercepts going forward. The community edition will sort of be a limited amount of intercepts you can set up, a limited amount of services, and the enterprise edition will be all encompassing.
So there are some. So for me, that's the thing I would buy, is because I want the support, because I don't know what I'm doing, and
yeah.
Like, even if I did, it's the height of arrogance to assume I know better than the folks working on it, you know, like, whatever. If I can afford to work with a net, I want a net, you know, obviously. So
yeah,
that's a really good.
We see this a lot with like ambassadors, like in terms of the API gateway, Josh. Didn't like. Sure. We say to folks, like, you know, you're often paying money to Tanzu, you're paying money to Amazon to run your Kubernetes cluster, and that's money well spent, right? You're taking that management overhead, that risk away. And it's the same thing with Ambassador, the API gateway. You can run it yourself, but, you know, should you? Like, should you not focus, like, your energy, your time, your money on what actually has value to your customers? You know I mean, like, you can write some cool new functionality, ship that to customers, they get happier. Everyone wins. So I definitely think there's a lot of discussion at the moment around Kubernetes around sort of the buy versus build.
Do you mean I think plus that's I can try it out with the community edition. I can get the make it wiggle prototype going on my own.
100%. Yeah, we've made it as self-service as possible. And if folks, when they pop along to get Ambassador and follow the tutorials, like the tutorials, we can even spin you up a remote cluster. We have, like, if you haven't got your own cluster, we can give you a temporary cluster to play around with. We've tried to make it as easy as possible for folks to try, because honestly, once you try it, like, you very quickly get it. Sometimes describing it or reading about it, like telepresence, is useful, but it was like me when I actually spun up my cluster like 3 or more years ago on the first version of telepresence. Yeah. I was like, whoa, I totally get it now. Do you know what I mean? You know, as an engineer, sometimes you have to just put your hands on stuff and play with it. We have deliberately made it as easy to do that as possible. So if folks do stumble, we've got a Slack channel. So you can find us in what is called the DataWire Slack, the Ambassador Labs open source Slack. You can find me, you can find my colleague Cindy, Peter. We're all there and you can ask us questions in the Slack. But it should be as simple as logging on to getambassador.io, following the links for telepresence. Try it in your own cluster, try it in one of our clusters. Building that mental model, actually playing around with the commands. And we've got Java examples, we've got Spring examples, we've got Node, Python. Again, try to make it as easy for folks, for whatever your sort of native language is, as easy as possible to get started. And we'd love your feedback.
Love that. Yeah. Love that. And just if, you know, any team that has you on it that's a deep bench indeed. That's a good team. I'm impressed.
Thank you, Josh. Appreciate that.
So good. So go get an ambassador. I will check it out. You're on, if we don't mind, I want to switch gears here a little bit. You just mentioned one thing that I think is kind of interesting, which is that debug. You mentioned a quick demo, making it easier for people to get their hands on it.
Mm-mm.
To me, that's, when I think about the 5-minute demo from yesteryear, right? This idea of give me something working, and in the context of Ruby and Rails, I remember you talked about the 5-minute demo. You know, give me an app babysitting a database, like that, right?
Yeah,
give me the elevator pitch for software, basically. You know, and I've always loved that idea of a 5-minute demo. Not that 5 minutes is an intrinsically useful number for measuring value of software, but it's this idea that I can get something that registers in people's minds very quickly, right?
Yes.
I think people have a very short attention span, right? And so
there's a lot of choice, Josh. Like, I think in the Kubernetes, like your cloud native space, you look at the cloud native, like, you know, I love the CNCF, love the cloud native space. It's a fantastic community. But you look at the cloud native landscape, right? And the joke is it's kind of an eye chart, right? It is, you know, a lot of services there. And I think like you often know your pain point, but if you can't be productive in a tool within a few minutes, you're on to the next one.
You're disengaged. And at least I am. I have no, especially, and the thing is, I think we don't do ourselves any favors, because so often we talk about deploying all of this stuff as like a foundational bit before you can actually get to the piece that we care about. So if your first step is deploy Kubernetes, you know, I'm out. But of course it has to be. Everybody has a cluster laying around, you know?
Yeah.
And then in as much as valuable as things like Istio and whatever are to people, again, I hope that's not your first step. I hope I don't need to install that to appreciate whatever, you know? So what you're talking about, this idea of having a focus on getting something in people's minds and eyes and hearts really quickly is it's amazing. You know, I love that. I can't wait to hear
it. I think that's sort of core to our jobs, Josh, right? Sort of like with the dev advocate, dev relations, kind of connecting with the communities. Like I can definitely relate to show me what this thing does, help me learn as fast as possible. And to your point, like we are adding like more layers on top of stuff now. That's kind of just the way like it goes, whether Kubernetes or go serverless or whatever, you often need like the platform to be there before you can sort of get the value. So we've invested a whole lot of time on minimizing the pain around getting the platform. Like we'll spin you up a Kubernetes cluster behind the scenes. We'll give you instructions to spin up, you know, Minikube or whatever, because you're right. In order to actually understand how the tool you're experimenting with works with the platform, you need the platform. And I think that's sort of, that's what definitely sort of made our jobs a little bit more challenging, I think, more part of the fun, right? But back in the day, it was more like you spin up your Java app, you obviously have an IDE probably in the mix. I know your live demos are legendary, Josh, in terms of what you can type faster live than I can normally, but like that was all you needed. Now you need a cluster, you need some other stuff going on, right?
I think the levels of abstraction have changed, isn't that fair? Like with Spring Boot, you've got this thing called autoconfig, which I'm sure you know, but auto configuration lets me not think about stuff. Which is, if it works, that's exactly what you want.
Yes.
Fingers crossed it always works. But when it doesn't, you know, there's a reason that people go to the, you know, we have a whole lot of documentation around, okay, what's happening behind the scenes, just so we can help people understand what they have to take for granted. They need to understand what they don't need to understand. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Right? Sometimes you have to look behind the curtain, right?
Here. Yeah. And so the same thing is now happening around the Kubernetes space. You've got, well, not now, but for the last few years, pretty quickly it became clear that a pod was not the reasonable level of abstraction, nor was just a deployment. So then you get things like Helm, right?
Or yeah,
you can customize, right?
Yep.
Customize makes it so that kubectl apply, the output of kubectl apply isn't just a few things; it could be a whole system. You know, you could actually have that could be my install script, right? I can deploy, an ERP system with kubectl apply, or something like that. It's crazy, that's your installer. And if your code is fast enough, there's no reason that all couldn't congeal into a working thing within minutes,
Funny you mentioned this, John. I had a fascinating conversation with a new architect, an architect, longtime Java programmer, architect that had moved into the world of Kubernetes. And he described it as wrapper upon wrapper upon wrapper. And it was fascinating. Like, it really helped me empathize with the journey that, he was a very skilled programmer, but coming to Kubernetes, he was just like, right, I got Kubernetes. Then I needed some YAML. Then I needed Helm. Then I needed Helm files. Then I needed, and then he was like, and I've heard about service mesh. And I was I could see the pain. Exactly. I could see that he was literally going like, it's like turtles all the way down, right? There's just layer upon layer upon layer. So we've got to, I think, as an industry, help with that ultimately. At the moment, it's probably opinions and guidance and pointers. I think a platform, a high level, to your point, high levels of platform abstractions will become clearer over time, just because not everyone is super invested in learning all these layers. Like, to your point, I love that Ruby on Rails, the Spring Boot convention, convention over configuration. And if you need to pop the hood, you can, right? Because, I've dove into the annotation sometimes, like, oh, it's doing this, and this. Yeah. I actually want it to do something different. But for 95%, pick a number, 95% of use cases, at rest controller works fine, right? Sure. that kind of stuff. And then Ruby, I did a lot of work on Ruby on Rails. Cool. Like, again, 95% of the time, works perfectly. I think we're sort of missing that in the Kubernetes world at the moment, right?
And we have, I love platforms as a service, obviously. So, I'm happy to see things like Knative emerge around the Kubernetes space. That's cool. I think, do you remember Bitter EJB by Bruce Tate? Like,
I don't
20
know,
years
I
ago, so. No. Maybe 15, 16.
I mean, I worked on EJB, both the original one and the later ones, right? And I've still got the mental challenges from that, the mental scars, right?
The first two versions, flawed. We all agree, right? Like, 3.0 is pretty darn great, but the first two versions, and Bruce Tate, he wrote this book called Bitter EJB, and the whole point of this was, like, he had this really weird, and I don't know who thinks of these metaphors, but it stuck in my mind, and here we are decades later, so of course it must have been useful. He talked about how he didn't want to have to eat the whole elephant, right? Like,
oh, interesting.
Well, first of all, who eats elephants? And second of all, who eats the whole thing? Either way, like, apparently, like, he described it as, like, in order to understand any little bit of it, I need to understand all of it.
Oh,
it's like
overwhelming. Yeah, yeah.
Mm. You can't have that, like, make it wiggle moment, that 5 minutes.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Oh, you know, our Spring IO guides, I don't know if you've ever seen those, but we have spring.io/guides. Those guides are all 10, 15, 20 minutes to get something.
Use them a bunch,
working.
Josh. Use them a bunch. Yeah. If you want to go in a specific concept, it's a great bootstrap. As in, like, and you give the prerequisites up front, don't you? And you get the expectations. It's going to take you 10 minutes. No, I love that. That's a perfect way for me to chunk my learning, right?
Right. But also you get, we want the feedback that, oh, okay, it's working. The endorphin hit of something working.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't have to be huge. Just the basic, here's a REST API. Oh, good. I wrote a hello world value to a database.
Yeah, yeah.
Table or whatever, you know, whatever, just the smallest possible thing. And it's all, you know, to see what teams like Ambassador and what you're doing and so on. That's, you know, it's very much what I care about as well, right? Here on the Spring team, you care about that.
Being an engineer, Josh. Now, I love the way you said about the dopamine hit, because I remember I started coding when I was about 10 years old in BBC Basic, right? And even the simple, like, print line, my name was like, what? Yeah. That's right. Do you know what I mean? And the ability, like, I always loved, like, Lego, and we had, like, something called Technic in the UK, Lego Technic. Right. It's like a Meccano, that kind of, like, Erector set, I think you guys call it in the US. Right. Like, that for me, just building something, seeing it work.
Right.
And I remember when I first saw it on a screen, I was like, wow. And I still get that these days. So, to your point, a good demo, I'm firing up and I'm going, oh, what's going on here? And I suddenly have that light bulb moment where it all comes together. It can be simple, right? But it can be like, whoa, like, this is going to be like, it's going to change my day, right? It's going to unlock, remove this pain. And everyone gets that, right?
Do you feel like we've moved? Like, okay, so imagine you're just starting off and you're writing your first C program, your first basic program, whatever, or JavaScript, I don't know, whatever. You're writing Hello World. Mm-hmm. At that point, you are one level removed from the core operating system that you've got in your machine.
Yes.
And so, like, I think as we get more and more professional, whatever, you know, as we become better at our craft, or I guess that's up for debate, if we become more of whatever it is we're doing, it feels like the levels between me and Hello World get more and more. The things I have to add to my operating system.
Yeah, agreed.
Before I can start writing that Hello World code. So by the time you're talking about Kubernetes and Istio and all that, I'm now dozens of operating systems into this. I've now become a system administrator.
Yeah, yeah.
Before I can even begin to think about writing the code that fits into that last mile.
And you got to understand so many more things, Josh. I did a talk actually at DockerCon a few years ago, like talking about I think I called it like the good, the bad, and the ugly of continuous delivery with Java.
Yeah.
And I talked a lot about, like, I definitely saw this. I was going into companies where they used to, you know, bring in their Spring, sorry, building their Spring app into a jar, kind of, you know, working with the ops team to deploy it. But now they were expected to write Docker files. They're expected to write Kubernetes files. And they weren't interested in learning all these things. Like, and I get it, right? They were like, and they were sort of proper app developers. They wanted to write cool code, add functionality, add value to users. And now they had to learn, like, what's the difference between Alpine, Ubuntu? You know, how should I expose these ports? And I remember at the time thinking, like, I always loved the ops side and I get involved and always learned it. Yeah. But I was like, these folks have got a job to do. They're busy people, right? And, like, they don't want to, like, some of us want to learn this stuff, others don't. And I'm like, wow, we are making it hard for you. I mean, with all this great new tech. Again, it gives you lots of, like we say, affordances, lots of value.
Yeah, yeah.
Always those trade-offs, right? And being forced to learn all these new syntaxes and YAML and things, we've definitely got to change that, I think, in the future, right?
Well, you mentioned one thing, that particular problem is now pretty well addressed with Buildpack support and Spring Boot.
Loving the Buildpacks. Yep, loving that. Mm-hmm.
With Spring Boot, you can do Maven Spring hyphen boot colon build hyphen image, and it'll just, the output of that is a Docker image in your registry. You can Docker tag it or Docker push it.
I did play around with that. That's pretty cool. Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, it sort of removes the cognitive overhead of having to learn about a bunch of other stuff, right? Like the Buildpack command itself, like the CNCF tool, is pretty straightforward. A pack, exactly. Yeah, like, I like that. And it's great, you know, language support for many different things. But the Spring stuff, like, again, it reminds me of going back to my Ruby on Rails days where I was like rake da, 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 something, right? And it would just magically happen.
Yeah.
And I like that. So kudos to the Spring team for putting that one.
As long as it's useful magic, right? You got to be able to debug it later. That's the point. And Spring, you can debug. Spring, you can point to the configuration and say, okay, that's the thing that's contributing this bean. But just seeing what you're doing for the Kubernetes space, awesome. My friend, you've been doing InfoQ. You're an InfoQ contributor.
I see you wearing a QCon t-shirt, Josh. I just noticed halfway through. Yeah. That's pretty awesome, right? Yeah. I looked at it, I recognized that branding. Like, so InfoQ is the writing sort of website. It's InfoQ.com, shameless plug. QCon is our conference events. Yeah, yeah.
It's Q. It's the best. So I contributed to InfoQ.com as a Java contributor.
Yeah,
Java
Track. Chance. Thank you. Thank you.
You know, more than a decade ago. And I just haven't done a lot more there, but you know, you've just been, you keep at it, and I just love reading your stuff. I really appreciate everything you're doing in there.
Thank you, Josh. No, I like to provide a space for others to contribute. Yeah. Whether it's we've got QCon Plus, which is our online conference. Yeah. So shameless plug, May 17th, 28th, folks can go to qcon.plus. And InfoQ, you know, is the sort of, we do podcasts, we do presentations, we do a lot of text content there. Yeah. And for me, it's all about providing a platform for others to share their learning. Do you know what I mean? Like as much as there's, you know, other angles to it, but I've always enjoyed helping others share their knowledge, because, you know, we can learn cool stuff, but what's even better is putting it out there for others to build on, stand on your shoulders, right?
I just wanted to say, though, that I think that particular role was, you're perfect for it. Your brain is you're so curious, and I just love to follow you on whatever learning adventures you decide to embark upon. You seem to do a great job of just sharing what you've learned, letters from the edge, that kind of thing. And I just really, you're awesome. I love your work. I love watching all the different things that you get into. It seems like you have an insatiable curiosity.
Thank you, Josh. Curiosity is my watchword, right? I like understanding things, right? Sure. I like helping others to understand. So I've got to bound my time sometimes, because, you know, the world is infinite, right? Sure. But I do love tech in particular, like software engineering. So that's been my passion for many years. And it's always super inspiring watching others on the journey. You, like there's Trisha G, you know, bunch of names, right? Like Simon Maple, I've come up with.
Angie,
fantastic, right? Watching all these folks, you know, come together, share their knowledge, like that inspires me. It's like a virtuous circle, right?
Wonderful. I appreciate it. I just wanted you to know.
Thank you.
Where can people find you on the internet if you want to be found?
Yeah, so you can find me at Daniel Bryant UK on most of the places. So Daniel Bryant UK, Twitter, GitHub, LinkedIn.
Bryant.
Thanks, Josh. Yes, that's right. Yep. You can find me there on Twitter, LinkedIn, GitHub, in the Ambassador Lab Slack, DataWire Slack. You can find me in the Kubernetes Slack. I've monopolized Daniel Bryant UK in most places. So feel free to reach out to me. I love getting involved. Like, love chatting with folks. And you know, shameless plug again, do pop along to getambassador.io. You can find me on there. You can find the tutorials that myself and my team have written. Right. We'd love your feedback. You know, that's really a key thing I'd ask folks to provide.
Awesome. Okay. My friend, great to see you. Fellow Java champion, InfoQ contributor, ambassador, developer, advocate extraordinaire. Thank you.
Awesome, Josh. Always great catch gun. I appreciate you wearing the QCon t-shirt, right? Representing the brand strong. Thank you very much.
I'm wondering if you know.
That's brilliant. Thanks for everything you do, Josh. Thank you. Bye now.
A Bootiful podcast is produced by me, Josh Long. I do these podcasts because I believe that everything we do in software is for and made better by people. I want to hear from you. I'm Josh at joshlong.com by email, or at starbuxman on Twitter, where, of course, my direct messages are wide open. Do you have guest ideas, topic suggestions, feedback? Don't hesitate to reach out. If you like the show, then please consider rating it on iTunes and leaving a review, as it really helps the show. I sampled music from Steve Combs' Them from Morning in Springtime and Steve Combs' Small Victory, both of which are licensed under a Creative Commons license. I'm trying to hire production assistants to make the production of this podcast easier. I want to make sure that we can add things like show notes and transcripts and just generally do more. If you would like to advertise on the show, then please reach out to me. And if you can't or don't want to advertise but would like to otherwise support the show, then please consider supporting me at patreon.com, patreon.com/Josh Long, for as low as $4 a month. Thanks again. No harm came to any seasons in the making of this podcast.